Landlords, whether you own one rental property or hundreds, you want to run a profitable business because your future depends on it. Education is the key to opening doors. Your success depends heavily on knowing and complying with dozens of rules while balancing the need of the business for profit. This show lets you listen in on conversations that various landlords have regarding real stories that are posted on our forums. Now come join in on the conversation. And happy landlording.
Eric, tell me a little bit about yourself. Who are you and what do you do?
So, well, I'm your husband. You should know that by now, right? Cassandra and I started the company together. I stayed in the Guard for a while, working full-time with the Alaska Air Guard, trying to, keep the money flowing into the company while it did nothing but burn it for the first few years. right now what I do is I'm the sales and leasing manager. So I work, I have two teams underneath me. We work with the new property owners that are coming on board. So seeing if we're a good fit for them, if they're a good fit for us. And then we also work with, the leasing team underneath me. So we are taking those new properties that we bring on and then the properties that have gone vacant, getting them out on the market in a timely manner. Advertising them, showing them, leasing them, screening tenants, all that fun stuff.
So we own Real Property Management as well as the Landlord's Almanac. Can you differentiate between the two, what the differences are for landlords?
So Landlord's Almanac is sort of a resource for that 70%+ of landlords out there that are trying to do it themselves. And that's, I think, that's really how kind of we got our start, right? Because we had 11 units before we ever, that's a big point of pride with me, actually, is that we had 11 units before we ever started playing with someone else's money. There's a lot of, property managers that, didn't have that opportunity. And so, they're making a few more mistakes on someone else's dime. But, so the Landlord's Almanac has always been really rewarding because it's an opportunity to sort of give back when we were at that stage of do it yourself we couldn't afford a property manager starting out. But then we were just in a fortunate position that by the time that we could start to afford a property manager, we just went ahead and started our own property management company. And then we called it, Real Property Management. It's not to say that that's easy, though, right? I mean, this has been a thorough butt kicking for the last almost 8 years. There's a huge difference between managing your own property and managing hundreds of other people's properties, because it doesn't matter how good of a property manager you are if that does not make you a good owner of a property management company. I always joke that right now about 20% of my job is property manager and about 80% is entrepreneur that, can be translated elsewhere.
Well, it's partly because the rules that worked for you and your property was a decision between you and your property and yourself. It didn't involve everyone else's opinions, thoughts, and concepts at that time.
Right.
I mean, it was really just you, the tenant, and the law. And now when you add the fact that you have a middleman, you have to make a rule that is scalable to all properties, that's safe and consistent and can hold all people accountable to a set rules.
Well, that's the big thing, right? Is you hit it with scale. And that's actually so in the sales side, when we're working with new owners, one of the challenges we've run into owners that have built really substantial portfolios, 20, sometimes as many as 80 or more properties, units on their own. And you have to explain to them that we're going to do things different. It doesn't mean we're going to do them wrong. It means we're going to do them different than you, because the way you scale a company so that you do it, more or less the same way every time, because you have to do that way. I mean, you can't have one-offs. You can't have hundreds or thousands of one-offs. You can't have it, well, this property owner likes it this way and this property owner likes it that way. It'd be easy to pat ourselves on the back and say that, anybody who says they do that is lying.
It doesn't happen.
It just doesn't happen. There's just no way you could do it. As a human being, you cannot have thousands, you know, hundreds or thousands of different operations manual for each different unit, for each different property. There's just, it's not scalable. And you'll I say probably before you crash and burn is you'll hit sort of a Peter principle. You won't be able to scale.
Mm-hmm.
You'll just hit that ceiling and you'll stop. So we have to work with owners a lot of times. I explain to them that we're going to do things slightly different. But what we're looking for is ultimately what are those key things that, what's the end goal that rounds everything out? And that's, you know, the property is getting taken care of. Tenants are happy. Tenants are staying in. You're not having to pay us to do releasing it all the time, because frankly, it helps us out if I can keep our leasing team smaller. Mm-hmm. If you, as the landlord, keep your tenants longer.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can put in good tenants at reasonable prices that keep the place in good shape, then I don't have to have a huge leasing department with tons of employees to manage. You know, there's sort of a symbiotic relationship there.
I like to give it as an example and something that's a little more visible and tangible, since most of our audience is do-it-yourself landlords. And for, let me use gutters as an example.
Mm-hmm.
When you manage the fourplex, duplex, single-family home yourself, there's going to be two ways of how you look at the gutters. You're going to either look at it and say, well, when I see that it's overflowing and not properly draining, I'll then go up there and clean it.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll say, I'll just wait until the tenant complains and it may create an ice dam or whatever later. Whereas when it's inside of a property management company, they put you, good ones, will put you on a calendar and ask you every year in August, do you want your gutters cleaned? So that way it's routine, it's maintained, whether it's needed or not. It doesn't matter. It's the fact that it's going to get done on a yearly basis.
Exactly.
Whereas when you're a DIY landlord, you could probably physically drive over there, go up there, look and say, well, it's not needed, to save yourself that $80-$100. But the thing is that having the record, having the bookkeeper, having the gutters cleaned and on a scheduled maintenance is where property management is going to come into play to help you. And yeah, it might be a little bit more expensive at times because the gutters might have not been needed, but do you have the time to drive to every one of your properties to see if it's needed or not?
And realistically, neither one of those that you previously described are scalable.
Mm-hmm.
You have to, even if you are somebody who owns, let's say, three different properties. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not talking units. I'm not talking triplex. I'm talking three separate properties. The likelihood that you're going to remember to go do gutter inspections just on your own is slim. You have to go out and set yourself a schedule, set yourself a timeline, you know, say, okay, every March, I'm going to put a reminder on my calendar to go do gutters. Now, then you get into, okay, is it realistic for me to whip out a ladder? Do I have the vehicle to get the ladder over there? What do I need to think about as far as safety, as far as how high are these gutters? Can I get to all the gutters? Really, it's just if you can start practicing that scalability early, you know, it's something we ask ourselves inside the business, right? Every time we come up with a new solution to a problem, is we always, before we decide on that solution, we always ask ourselves, would this work with 1,500 units?
Mm-hmm.
And if it doesn't, then okay, well, then it's not a solution. And mm-hmm. so I think you as a landlord, even at the private level, need to ask yourself, yeah, it might work with my three different properties to drive from place to place and, you know, show up with my ladder and climb up there. But you got to say, like, okay, what if I own 25?
Mm-hmm.
Does this scale?
And is that your goal? Because sometimes people's goals is just to have two duplexes and stay at that size because they like control. They like to touch and feel it. They like to know everything that's going on. And that's okay. Just know that the guy who can scale up to 25 and hire a professional team is going to make way more money than the guy who has just two duplexes.
Right. Where do you,
and that's okay. It's just
the same
your goal.
Thing. Yeah. It's the same thing we said, you know, said in the Air Force. You know, I was basically did combat air traffic control in the Air Force. And one of the things we would, you know, ask ourselves a lot is like, we'd kind of jokingly say, you know, where do you want your brain bites going?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Where do you want to be putting your mental workload?
Mm-hmm.
And as much as you can take away those, those small things like, okay, I'm going to put it on my counter that March 15th, I send the gutter guy out.
Mm-hmm.
Even if I only have two units, that's a, I think that's a more professional way of doing things.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, you know, like you say all the time, is rentals are running a small business. And I think all too often, there's too many people that treat it as like it's this own separate boutique thing. No, it's not.
Mm-mm.
It's a business.
Mm-hmm.
And treat it like a business. Run it like a business.
The most common mistakes I see is people who are doing the one-offs. Well, I just handicapped the system, the process to do XYZ to try to spin it off or make it faster or make it this. And when they start handicapping a system, then the system breaks and then they end up with huge consequences and they're not making any momentum. And then when they make bad decision after bad decision, they lose all their money. So tell me a story that you've had recently with a landlord that was most important or valuable to you from the Landlord's Almanac. So like when you worked with some landlords in the Landlord's Almanac and you volunteered to help other landlords, what was a successful, good, filling story that you have where you helped somebody?
Man, the last two talks we did, so the second to last one we did is, you know, it was that one, both of them were pretty stressful for us, right? Because they, what I did for the previous talk was we essentially took every property we had personally had ever owned or had an ownership interest in and said what we did right, what we did wrong. And I think that was really helpful in a lot of ways because it's easy to stand in front of a group and pretend like you're infallible, like you've never made a mistake. But when you stand up there and say, okay, I know I browbeat you guys about tenant screening every single Landlord's Almanac class. Let me show you these six tractor trailer size dumpsters that I filled because I didn't.
Right.
You know?
Well, at least it was practicing with our money.
And then, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, screwing up with our own, with house money. So then then I think the second or the most recent talk was, I spent since April working with a couple of agents and Anchorage Economic Development Corporation and put together, because I think for years we've seen fourplexes just get more and more and more expensive. And so we were trying to put that to like, how do we quantify that for people? And, what I did is I, you know, did a whole economic analysis of what was going on in the rental market, rental prices, vacancies, and especially focused on fourplex prices. Anyway, happy landlording story. I'm going too far down the bunny trail here, but happy landlording story was the really, what felt like, at least to me, was really, really genuine thank yous after that. And knowing that, you know, all those months and long weekends staring at a computer screen and trying to do my best attempt at statistics was actually really appreciated by people. That felt really good. And so if, you know, if you're listening and you're one of the people who came by and thanked me after one of those talks, I want you to know that meant a lot and I very much appreciated it.
So let's go ahead and get started on the first forum question. So part of our podcast here is to go through questions that have been asked on forums either by us or in our forums at the Landlord's Almanac. A lot of people are shy in the forum, so they'll just post the question to us and then we'll either share it on the forum or just answer the questions. So those that are in the forum may or may not have seen some of these questions because of that. So here's our first question for you. I am a new landlord and I have a tenant moving in on September 26. Would you charge the 5 days in September plus the month of October when she moves in or just the 5 days of September? What's the best way to make this a process?
So this is one of those, you know, tactic versus technique. There's, you know, there's not necessarily a legally right or wrong way to do this, but there's certainly, I think a technique right way to do this. You know, you're not going to go to jail, you know, go to landlord jail if you do it wrong. But what you do is when she moves in, she's going to pay an entire month's rent. And you're going to say, well, that's weird. You're, why are you charging her an entire month's rent for just for the month of October? Well, or excuse me, just for the 5 days in September. Well, you're not. What you're doing, so she's paying that full month's rent, let's say $1,000. And then you prorate the second amount. So she's paying the 5 day amount on October 1st. What the reasoning behind that? So what you're doing is you're taking a normal prorated month and then a regular month and you're just swapping them over. What that means is they have to come to the table with more money. There's a dirty trick that some dirtbag tenants have figured out, where what they do is they will try to lease a property at the very end of the month. So they have to put as little money in as possible. And then they've learned to play the eviction game. So then they're going to drag you out for months and months and months. And essentially what they've been able to do is find a free place to live for months at a time for as little money as possible. And then they just keep playing this eviction rollover game. It's getting a little less common as people are running background checks and as background checks are getting better and better. But I would just say you would probably have a hard time finding this just looking at CourtView, because especially if they're moving from state to state doing this. So if you're planning on looking at court records in your local area, you may miss it. Think of how many counties there are. Think of how many states there are. And all those different places that people can have evictions filed against them. And unless you're going to personally check all of them, yeah, a national level background check is really the way to catch this. And then also do the
local
full property, or excuse me, full month's rent up front. And then you make it good to them on the second month. They're paying the prorated the following month.
Well, it's all about risk and reward, because A, when you flip the months around where they have to pay full 30 days no matter what, so you got your deposit plus your full 30 days, it reduces the risk of that person that has applied to try to take your place from being that hopper. Mm-hmm. Because he will target that landlord that doesn't know that trick and says, yeah, I just want to move somebody in. I just want to move somebody in and pat myself on the back and say it's rented. Well, if they were to charge the full amount up front, they'll sit there and go, well, I don't want to lose that kind of money. I'm going to keep hopping landlords until they find one that'll do a lower amount so they can hop.
Yeah.
So it's all about reducing your risk of headaches. It's all about reducing the potential of things going sideways. And if it does go sideways, you at least have 30 days of rent plus a security deposit sitting in your pocket, right, whereas before you wouldn't have.
And let's be clear, you're not making them pay for days that they didn't live there.
No.
You're simply there. So they're paying the full $1,000 rent in a $1,000 rent scenario. They're paying the full $1,000 rent on September 26th when they move in. Then when October 1st rolls around, they're only paying the 5 days portion of of rent on that day. Then it goes back to normal. And so it's essentially a screening technique.
Yeah, it's another form. It is. And then to make it even more complicated, the bad tenants talk. And one of the things that they know about is if they go to a DIY landlord versus a professional management company, they know that the likelihood or the risk that landlord will do a full background check to catch that they are hoppers or to catch that they're in a current eviction or to catch one of those issues is very low. So they will purposely target the DIY landlords versus professional management. It was very interesting for me as a landlord and also moving into more of a managing for other people that when I was a do-it-yourself landlord, I would find all the crazies applying for our place. And then when I went to professional property management, it's very rare that we get the crazies. I mean, they happen, but it's way less of a ratio of applications. The other thing that that tends to happen in situations like this is the form of acceptable payments. I am surprised at how many DIY landlords still accept checks on the first round of payments. Right. That was a mistake I personally made 12 years ago.
let's pause for a second. There's checks and there's checks. There's cashier's checks.
Yes, those are different.
And then there's personal checks.
Yep.
in personal checks, never for the security deposit and never for the first month's rent. Mm-hmm. You always do verified funds. Now, you can accept cash if you would like, but again, that comes back to that whole can this scale thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is you know, we can't do cash because...
Well, it's, with us being as large as we are in RPM, real property management, accepting cash would be us having anywhere at any given time $100,000 in cash sitting at the office. Yeah, so just, we can't do it because of the scale
issue.
It's just
a safe, yeah, it's a, well, and it's an employee safety mm-hmm. issue. Yeah, mm-hmm. you can't, but it, as a DIY landlord, is it, you know, is it a big deal to have $2,000 mm-hmm. cash?
Mm-hmm.
I just really, from a professional standpoint, even if you could, even if you are a DIY and mm-hmm. you're trying to do, you know, I would really encourage you to stick with verified funds, even if you could do cash. I just feel like that it's more professional. It establishes a precedence early with the tenant that they're dealing with a professional, that this is not a mom and pop operation. Mm-hmm. And I think you'll, that's maybe something we don't talk about very much is if you establish with the tenant that you ain't playing around,
mm-hmm.
how many more problems could you never have to deal with?
Mm-hmm.
Because that was just sort of understood at the get-go. It's like, oh, these guys aren't messing around.
I remember back in the day when I came and started talking to landlords and I said, just say you screen. Even if you don't screen, just say you screen. This was way back in the day. And just saying that they screened, the ratio of finding the bad tenants versus the good tenants changed dramatically. Yeah. Nowadays, it's you do need to physically do you the process do need of to screen screening
now. Yeah.
Just to get rid of those that are out there. And
let's talk about why for just a second. So as vacancy rate goes down,
mm-hmm.
or excuse me, vacancy rate goes up, meaning there's more vacant properties, you're mm-hmm. going to see prices correct. After prices correct, meaning prices go down, we have noticed a dramatic difference in the quality of tenant that is applying lately, because they're
well, they have options now.
They do. They have options now, but they're sort of moving out of the hardcore slumlord properties that are out there that we don't, you know, you don't see those a lot, but don't get me wrong, they are definitely out there. The hardcore slummy properties, there's people running some pretty shady operations, and a lot of those really shady tenants are probably renting from them. But mm-hmm. As choice and competition has re-entered the market, because in Anchorage, we're going through a point where we were sub 2% vacancy for a while there,
mm-hmm.
and it's slowly climbing back up to a normal, healthy market. You're seeing a lot more of those really bad applications
mm-hmm.
show up.
The last statement I have for this particular question is that a lot of landlords don't do this and really need to consider doing this. There are programs and technologies now available for landlords to be able to track tenant ledgers. Because when you're flipping first, you know, the rents around like that to make it where your risk is better, where with the prorated in the first full 30 days rent, having a tenant ledger showing, okay, this is this rent, this is this rent, this is your late fee, and it automatically posts late fees, it automatically helps post the payments, which provides receipts to tenants of payments. That clean organizational process helps you with court, helps you with confrontation issues with tenants. It helps mm-hmm. you with confusing matters so that way they're not confused or lost. It helps them know how much that utility bill was again without them having to call you five times asking how many pennies was that so they could pay it. So just having a program in place will allow you to track the payment history of all of that and not forget. Mm-hmm. Some of the things that happens with DIY landlords is because they don't write it down or they don't use an Excel sheet or use a program to track payments, it makes them forget. You and I, like, there's no way we would remember half the stuff going on with the monies, because if it wasn't for programs, we wouldn't remember the pennies and all that kind of stuff.
Scott with Pioneer Floor Care is a longtime friend, business owner, and happens to have many rentals in the family. He falls into a category of what I would like to call hardworking, good people that provides great value for the price. As a result, Scott needs to be on your speed dial list. Since he and his family are landlords, they completely understand you need to have a variety of options when it comes to solving flooring problems. This is why Pioneer Floor Care is more than just a carpet cleaning company. They help with floor repairs, excessive water on the floor, creative options with odors, mildew mitigation, and many, many more. Give my friend Scott a call at Pioneer Floor Care.
Our next question that we have from the forum, which I think is an interesting one because a lot of people forget that they need to do this. What is a professional way of saying to the applicant, it is denied because you lied? You said that you were living with your in-laws, which is not true. You were in an apartment and you had late fees and there's now collection history and an eviction filed by previous landlords.
Yeah, well, let's take one step back. First of all, if you were looking on court view only, when I say court view, I mean like public court records. That's just the brand name of the particular system that services things up here in Alaska. But would you have seen late fees or collections? Nope. Not unless they filed in civil court, and they might not have. So, you know, if you see property managers talking about their bargain basement prices, you know, that kind of thing, there's...
Oh, we had that last week. There was a real estate agent that was sitting there saying, yeah, we do tenant screening on the basic and it's free. Well, when you asked them exactly the details of what they were doing, all they were doing is looking at a public record of the court system.
Yeah.
It does not include collections. It doesn't include late fees or NSF fees or how many days
basically
behind on
nothing
anything.
Nothing financial. Yeah.
It's so, criminal, basically, or a civil judgment. That's it.
Criminal, if you're lucky. Yeah. And so first of all, if you weren't doing a legit background check, like a My Smart Move or something like that, you wouldn't have seen any of this. Okay, so let's chew on this for a second. There's now in this particular scenario, let's take this scenario for example. This was their last apartment. They were doing this hinky stuff. And then to add insult to injury, they lied about it. Mm-hmm. So this one's pretty straightforward. You would send them what's called an adverse action letter. I think we have one on landlordsalmanac.com.
There's one on the website. Yep.
Yeah, so if you go to the landlordsalmanac.com, you can find an adverse action letter. And an adverse action letter is a really fancy way of saying denial letter. It's just fancy lawyer speak written by attorneys. It's got all the language that's going to keep you from getting in trouble as far as staying in line with the fair housing law. But, I mean, like, this particular scenario is pretty straightforward. You just say you're denied. You don't need to get into the fact that they lied. That's, you know, that's just one more reason why if it, let's say it was a small collection and you otherwise would have kind of, I'll let it go. But the fact that they not only had a collection and late fees and they lied, I'd say this is a hard deny. Get an adverse action letter. Moving on.
Something that a lot of people don't understand is that an adverse action letter is actually a federal law. It's required. And what it is it says, based on federal, they said when you're doing background checks on anybody, whether it's for mortgage, credit cards, whatever, rental applications, they say you have to respond with approval or denial letters. And when you do your denial letter, you have to mark what was the reason for the decline, right? Well, a lot of people think that they have to do all this detailed, full-blown explanation and argumentative responses as to why they did a decline on somebody. No, you really just say credit wasn't sufficient. You say background wasn't sufficient. Or you say payment history wasn't sufficient. There's like four or five things that you'd literally just check and move on. So you don't need to make this a confrontational type
situation.
No,
and you'll occasionally get harassed by tenants.
You'll get bullied.
they'll call you afterwards. I've had some like pretty legit sex offender level denials that... The dude went so far as walking into the office wanting to demand why had I denied him? You know, so he and I went to the side and had a conversation, but just know that there's a lot of people that have figured out that a certain level of intimidation will get them past that denial. Don't be that guy. Don't let them intimidate you into letting a bad tenant in.
Thanks so much for listening today. I appreciate it a lot. If you enjoyed this episode and many more to come, then start jumping in on the conversation. Come to our website, sign up, and start chit-chatting with others about your stories or help others through their stories. The website is www.thelandlordsalmanac.com. Hope to see you there, and I'll begin chatting with you as well.
So Eric and I had a wonderful conversation, and because of that, we're going to split this episode into two episodes. So stay tuned for the next one playing soon.